Windy City Queer Cast.
Gays and lesbians are all the rage.
We're here and we're queer.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
We're talking mega gay.
Ooh, I like that.
I'm Amy Matheny.
This program is brought to you in part by American Airlines, offering exciting GLBT vacations online at aa.com/rainbow.
You're listening to the Windy City Queer Cast, show number 481. I'm Amy Matheny, and wow, it's Olympic fever around the world, London Games, a lot of excitement, and I'm thrilled today to on a show. We have the sports editor for the Windy City Times, who's written for many, many papers around the Chicago area, Ross Foreman, on with me. We're going to talk about some of the top stories so far in these games and also some of the top controversies and how are gay and lesbian athletes doing. Richard Knight Jr. is back with us, a movie review. Wow, before the Kardashians, there was this woman. Yes, the story of the Queen of Versailles. This film has gotten a lot of attention because it started off as one story and very much with the economic downturn turned into another story, which has become kind of the face and story of America. And what's going on in GLBT news? Chick-fil-A stories heat up and continue. Are you sick of this story or not? Well, I don't know, but I'll probably talk about it, not in this show, but in the next show for sure. But it is in some of our news stories as protests and debates continue. It's a really big show. Let's get started.
I'm Kirk Williamson.
I'm Amy Matheny.
And this is the Week in News.
A federal judge in Connecticut has ruled against the Defense of Marriage Act in a challenge brought by married same-sex couples. George W. Bush appointee Judge Vanessa Bryant ruled that Section 3 of the 1996 law, which prohibits the federal government from recognizing same-sex marriages, violates equal protection guarantees. The six couples and one widower from Connecticut, New Hampshire, and Vermont brought the suit as a result of being denied federal benefits because they were legally married to a spouse of the same sex.
The American Academy of Nursing has added its voice to the growing majority of Americans who support marriage equality. The Academy's Board of Directors unanimously approved a position statement, Support for Marriage Equality. The Academy joins other health organizations, including the American Medical Association, American Psychiatric Association, American Psychological Association, and the National Association of Social Workers, in publicly supporting marriage equality.
In Pennsylvania, lesbian couple Jade Olmstead and Ashley Barber admitted to luring one of the women's ex-lovers into the woods and then beating, choking, and burying her. Their victim, Olmstead's 20-year-old ex, Brandy Stevens, suffocated on the dirt they shoveled into the grave that they dug in advance of the crime. The Crawford County District Attorney will determine if he will pursue the death penalty.
Chick-fil-A has now replaced the Jim Henson Muppets that were stopped from being included in its kids' meals with the Berenstain Bears. However, the Berenstain family said on the Bears website that the inclusion of books from the Bears series is not an endorsement of the restaurant's policies. Jim Henson Company ended its partnership with Chick-fil-A in the wake of company president Dan Cathy sharing his anti-gay stance.
GOP lawmakers in Tennessee are circulating a resolution that would condemn Republican Governor Bill Haslam for choosing not to fire a gay person on his staff. The resolution, which at least nine Republican chapters have signed so far, would also denounce Haslam for employing a Muslim woman and for not supporting two highly conservative pieces of legislation. Haslam did not hire the Muslim or gay employees, but kept them on the payroll after a change of leadership.
In New Mexico, Hope Christian School in Albuquerque has rejected admission to a three-year-old because he has two gay dads for parents. School administrators reportedly told the parents that these same gender couples are inconsistent with scriptural lifestyle and biblical teachings, and that the child's home life doesn't reflect the school's vision of a biblical family lifestyle.
The Great Lakes Leather Alliance will hold its 11th weekend, August 23rd through 26th in Indianapolis, Indiana. Events include the Kissing Booth, workshops, book signings, master-slave interviews, and a vendor fair. For more, see greatlakesleather.org.
Reports from the recent International AIDS Conference stated that two men from Boston have allegedly been cured of HIV through bone marrow transplants. After each received the transplants, the men also remained on their antiretroviral medication regimens. The men now reportedly show no signs of HIV in their DNA or RNA, and their HIV antibody levels have decreased.
On August 1st, 81 members of Congress sent a letter again to the Department of Homeland Security Secretary to recognize the ties of same-sex couples in immigration enforcement deportation cases. The letter was a follow-up to one sent on September 27th of 2011.
President Obama has nominated lesbian Pamela Ki-Mai Chen to serve on the United States District Court for the Eastern District of New York. In addition to being one of the few openly LGBT people to serve on the federal bench upon confirmation, she is only the second female Chinese-American judge in history.
In Texas, one half of a gay couple has been arrested a second time for criminal trespass when he requested a marriage license again. Mark Major Jimenez and Bo Chandler went back to the county records building after a court hearing. They refused to leave without a license, with Jimenez handcuffing himself to the waiting in line rope. Chandler didn't handcuff himself so he could get bail money in case Jimenez was arrested.
In world news, in 2011, 6,795 couples had civil partnership ceremonies in the United Kingdom, an increase of 6.4% over the previous year. The number of dissolutions rose by more than a quarter, however. Statisticians said this simply reflected the increasing number of people in civil partnerships. Prime Minister David Cameron and his Liberal Democrat deputy want to go further and allow same-sex couples to marry.
Vietnam's communist government is considering whether to allow same-sex couples to marry or legally registered and receive rights, which would make it the first Asian country to do so. Even longtime gay rights activists are stunned by the Justice Ministry's proposal to include same-sex couples in its overhaul of the country's marriage law.
In Lebanon, security authorities swooped in on a gay movie house in Beirut, shutting down the movie house, arresting 36 male attendees, and performing anal probes on them. An unknown number of the 36 have been released after an unnamed doctor administered the anal exam, which is meant to detect sperm.
Oxford University has revised its strict academic dress code to accommodate transgender students. Now men can attend formal occasions in skirts and stockings, and women can wear suits and bow ties. The university said it had rewritten laws governing academic dress following concerns that they did not serve the interests of transgender students.
In entertainment news, the cast of ABC's Modern Family has struck a deal that will keep the ensemble well paid as it starts its fourth season. All six adult actors, Ed O'Neill, Ty Burrell, Julie Bowen, Sofia Vergara, Eric Stonestreet, and Jesse Tyler Ferguson, wanted to boost their pay before the show returned to the air. Negotiations ended earlier when the cast refused to show up for a table read and filed a lawsuit seeking to void their seven-year contract.
Universal Television has signed a talent-holding deal with out singer-actor Ricky Martin. Martin will develop and star in his first network television series, as well as TV specials.
Dr. Horrible's Sing-Along Blog, the cult sci-fi horror musical starring Neil Patrick Harris and directed by Joss Whedon, will make its network television debut 4 years after it was filmed. Harris stars as Billy, whose alter ego, Dr. Horrible, is a budding supervillain with plans for world domination. The musical will air on the CW on Tuesday, October 9th.
Cher has announced that her new full-length album, which includes a duet with Lady Gaga, will be released by Christmas. Both the album and the duet written by Gaga were originally expected to be released last fall.
The director of The Matrix and the highly anticipated film Cloud Atlas has become the first major Hollywood director to publicly come out as transgender. Lana Wachowski has revealed her transition and claims she has undergone gender reassignment surgery, but this appears to be unverified. Lana was previously known as Larry. Her brother is co-writer, producer, and director Andy.
Tennessee Titans quarterback Matt Hasselbeck, the brother-in-law of The View panelist Elizabeth Hasselbeck, said he would welcome a gay teammate. He said that sexual orientation is kind of irrelevant to the discussion in terms of how we would view that person as a teammate or how we would view that person as a friend or how we would trust that person. Former Titan Wade Davis came out recently.
Literary legend and political activist Gore Vidal has died at the age of 86 of complications of pneumonia. Vidal wrote 25 novels, including The City and The Pillar, which features openly gay characters, and Myra Breckinridge. He also penned the Tony-nominated play The Best Man. Vidal also made two unsuccessful political runs for the Senate in California and the Congress in New York.
Sarah Jessica Parker is set to play a Vogue editor during her stint guest starring on Glee this fall. She mentors Chris Colfer's character, Kurt, after his move to New York City.
Rosie O'Donnell is producing a new HBO documentary about how young children deal with their parents' divorce. Don't Divorce Me, Kids Rules for Parents on Divorce. We'll give kids a chance to share stories of how divorce has impacted their lives and offer helpful advice to their parents. The documentary will premiere September 20th.
Michael Urie, best known for playing gay personal assistant Mark on the TV series Ugly Betty, is returning this fall in the CBS sitcom Partners. Urie will play a gay man who is best friends with a straight guy.
And openly gay TV director Paris Barclay will make the jump to the big screen when he helms the upcoming biopic of civil rights pioneer Barbara Jordan. Jordan was the first African-American elected to the Texas Senate after Reconstruction and the first Southern black female elected to the United States House of Representatives. Viola Davis is slated to play the lead. It is not known if Jordan's rumored lesbianism will be addressed. And that's the weekend news brought to you by Windy City Times.
Attention, love slaves of Chicago! I love listening to the Windy City Queercast. It makes me release my eggs. It can happen.
Let's go to the movies anyway and see.
I'm Richard Knight Jr. and here's your Night at the Movies minute. To paraphrase F. Scott Fitzgerald's quote in The Great Gatsby, "The rich are different from you and me." One would suppose that to be the case at the outset of Lauren Greenfield's entertaining and strangely compelling documentary, The Queen of Versailles, a profile of self-proclaimed timeshare king David Siegel and his Barbie dollish third wife, Jackie, as they construct what they tout as the largest home in America. The film opens with footage of the Siegels and their brood, they have 8 children, living large and bragging about the power their wealth has brought them. But these are not people who worry about dinner seating charts or fussing about good penmanship on handwritten thank you notes. Jackie, a 46-year-old former Mrs. Florida America with breast implants, blonde highlights, and other obvious cosmetic enhancements, is a woman who has her chauffeur go through the McDonald's drive-up, wears a fur coat around the house, and who brags about her $17,000 designer boots. David, 31 years her senior, claims with pride responsibility for securing Bush's place in the White House, and that the real reason for building the 90,000-square-foot home in Orlando is... because I can. Nothing about the Siegels and their rags-to-riches story seems atypical in these modern-day clampets with their lack of taste and avid desire for more, more, more are as familiar as all those instant lottery millionaires seemingly profiled on the news every other day. What sets this look at the nouveau super-riche and the film apart is that the Siegels let Greenfield and her crew continue filming when the dream began to collapse in 2008 after the mortgage crisis hit. Greenfield gets some of her most ironic footage, naturally, once the family is forced to, quote, economize, unquote. It's easy to tag the Queen of Versailles as nothing more than a portrait of wretched excess, and the kitsch factor is admittedly very high. But there's also something also subtly but powerfully disturbing going on underneath that has more, I think, to do with the strange combination of soullessness, anxiety, and a sense of some profound, intangible, irretrievably lost that stays with you long after the movie is over. I'm Richard Knight Jr., and that's your Night at the Movies Minute.
Anyone out there? Bueller? Bueller? post a comment at WindyCityQueerCast.com. Over the past week, all eyes around the world have been on the Olympic Games in London. How has this Olympic year been comparatively to years before? And what are the big stories and how have gay and lesbian competitors fared? Well, Ross Foreman, sports editor for Windy City Times, has also written for USA Today, the Tribune, the Sun-Times, the Daily Herald, and elsewhere. And he's focused for the past decade on covering LGBT sports. And I'm just thrilled to have Ross, who's a colleague and a family member here at Windy City Media Group, on to talk with us about these pretty exciting Olympic Games so far. Hey, Ross, how are you?
I'm doing great. How you doing?
I'm good. I mean, everyone I talk to, you know, whether they are see themselves as athletic or, you know, go out and watch sports on a regular basis, all eyes seem to be on these Olympics this year. How would you describe the Olympics so far in London 2012?
Well, there's so many great storylines within different sports. I think it's a great game. And I personally actually probably like the Winter Games more. But this has been a great Games. I mean, there's, you know, obviously 10,000 athletes and, so much excitement. There's the team drama between the U.S. and China, who's going to win the medal count. Mm-hmm. Obviously, you got, Usain Bolt had a incredible run. I mean, this is amazing. I can be so fast and just keep doing what he does. Obviously, you know, Americans, we certainly love Michael Phelps. I mean, what he's done career-wise is beyond incredible.
He's won more medals than anyone in the history of the Olympics. I mean, shattering that record this year.
Yeah, I mean, he's got 22 medals. It's kind of hard to believe.
Yeah, and then also we continue to see Olympic records and world records being broken. Are we just getting stronger, faster, more efficient, more focused, and more competitive in our sports? Is that what's happening? Or are we just an evolving people, and so we just ultimately get better?
Well, certainly it's the old bigger, faster, stronger, but I think a lot of it has to do with, you know, the past 3-4 years for a lot of these athletes. It's the training that gets them to where they're at now. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's so advanced, the technology, the training that they go through for years to get to the starting line, the diving board or wherever, for whatever sport they're in. It's so advanced. It's so much better, you know, than 10 years ago, 20 years ago, 50 years ago. I can only imagine what an Olympian, you know, 40 years ago sees what the games are like now. Mm-hmm. With the number of, you know, from the number of countries, the number of participants, to truly the training that an athlete goes through to get to that starting point.
Yeah. It's kind of unfathomable, really.
Say that again?
I said it's kind of unfathomable, the sacrifices made and the amount of time for something that in some of these sports takes, you know, minutes to seconds to be a champion, or between, you know, inches and minutes, can we say, and seconds.
There was a thing in the newspaper I saw. I read it today. I don't know, it was the last couple of days. I don't know, you know, some people can win their medal for their event, you know, a shot put or a discus or something like that, in like 20 seconds.
Right.
However, they no doubt have trained years for those 20 seconds.
Yeah.
So it's amazing. And, you know, the whole thing, and as I say, bigger, faster, stronger, the athletes are just so amazing. I mean, you know, just not only in stature, but the stuff they can do. I always shake my head when I look at the balance beam.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you think about it, it's so simple, and yet if I had to walk forward and then walk backwards, I'd wobble, probably fall off.
Yeah.
And yet they're doing flips and all this other stuff. It's like, How do they do that? It baffles me.
I'm always surprised that when they do these enormous flips and combinations that they stick it, and then sometimes they just spin or lift their leg, and, you know, that's when they wobble, and I think that really tells it right there, you know? Like, you have to be as focused on the small stuff as you do on the big stuff that you probably put all your attention on. So let's start with the gay and lesbian story here. Because as you said, there are 10,000 athletes. There are about 23. Is that the number, 23 out athletes? Is that surprising that it's still so low?
I think the number is about 20, give or take. There might be a couple of extras who haven't seen their name out there. You know, they're obviously the coach for the U.S. Women's National Soccer Team, Pia, I believe it's Sundage, is out. She came out a couple of years ago. But as far as, you know, give or take 20 athletes, 20 of 10,000. It's just over 10,000. I thought I heard 10,500.
Yeah.
If you think about that, and only 20,
yeah,
that's really low.
Well, and we're there. We're just not out. I mean, you have to kind of say, come on, we have to be there. But I mean, it is cool to kind of know who some of those athletes are and how they're doing this games. So tell us about some of the people who are out and kind of where they are, or how many we so far have medaled.
Well, I know there are two medalists so far, and the big one, of course, here in America is Lisa Raymond, tennis player, won the bronze medal with her partner. So that certainly is one for the LGBT community and also for the USA.
Yep.
And then I know there was another, I forget who it was, I believe it was a handballer who also had won it. So there definitely are two medalists within 20 is pretty good. Pretty
yeah.
good odds there.
Well, and absolutely. So. And there were a couple of handballers. They were not Americans, but who were both out and heading to the semifinals. Now, big story, of course, soccer and women's soccer. We know there are gay women's soccer players, but Megan Rapinoe of the U.S. team has done really well, scoring some goals and in some key games. And they look like that team is poised to medal for sure this games again. They're trying to hold on to the gold, right? They've won the past number of years.
Yeah, I think they definitely should be around when it comes to the medal ceremony. Though, you know, if they're not, that will be a bigger story. The fact if they're somehow eliminated. But that is a dominant team, clearly one of the best teams in the world, and you know Megan's a huge part of that team, and it's great to see her. I'm sure that was a tough time because she came out, I want to say within a month. I think she came out in July, and obviously the game started at the end of July.
Right.
So you figure a month before, obviously her mind, you know, in the beginning of July is focused on London and all that's going to go into it. You know, she has the U.S. national team experience, but you don't know really what's going to happen when you come right. out on a grand scale like that. And obviously she's been doing well, and the team's been doing incredible.
Yeah. And I think, you know, also it just takes those leaders, right, Ross? I mean, within a team, I mean, Megan, we've got Simone with Team USA basketball, you know, who's out. Obviously, we know there are potentially more WNBA and basketball players who are queer and aren't out, but they also look poised to you know, to medal again. They're such a strong, dominant team, women's basketball.
Yeah, I think actually the basketball, both men and women, has been fun to watch. The men is, you know, it's kind of a different story because you have the pros in there, and it's I'm not really completely sold on that. You know, I guess I'm old school. I'd rather see the collegiate players.
Yeah.
In the Olympics, you know, to see these dream teams, the first time, the second time, yeah, it was definitely, you know, cool when you see Michael Jordan and all these other people. But now it's kind of like, I understand the debate as well. You know, if the international teams are putting their pros out there, why aren't we?
Right.
So yeah, I can understand that. But there's such a difference if you take, you know, I don't know, like the Swedish national basketball team. I mean, you know, their best team couldn't beat the worst NBA team.
Right.
So it's kind of like, is this really a fair comparison? But, you know, certainly the U.S. women as well are doing great, and that's been a fun story to watch in these games as well.
And, you know, one of our out athletes, I believe he came out in the last games, the Australian diver Matthew Mitchum. I mean, he's been out He's been out for a while. You know, I think he's such an interesting story of how the times they are a-changing, because I was watching, you know, I haven't watched a ton of the diving, and I don't even know if it's over, but I did watch the doubles dives. I don't know if they call it synchronized dives or whatever. One of the earliest days of the Olympic Games. And it was interesting to see Greg Louganis, you know, in the audience, and just realize how far the sport's come to have, you know, a Matthew Mitchum, you know, at these games, and to know where that story kind of began with Louganis' story, right?
Yeah, this is the first games that Greg has gone back to since, you know, when he participated. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of an interesting story, like you say. I mean, he's now a mentor for the U.S. team. So, in essence, you know, if you look at those 23 out athletes, coaches, he would also be in that list.
Right.
It's kind of weird to see him in that role, but it certainly is very cool. And, you know, you think back to what he endured, and then you think about Matthew Mitchum, it's worlds apart. I mean,
yeah.
He was fearful for everything at that time. And, you know, he's talked on the record on how he didn't know what that would do to impact him. You know, he had to stay quiet about not only his orientation, certainly his HIV status as well. And now it's, you know, Matthew Mitchum is out there winning a gold medal, certainly had a role in the Gay Games a couple of years ago, and is a wonderful ambassador for the LGBT community.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really interesting. I mean, you know, I was reading an article this past week about, you know, just about the gay and lesbian athletes and the games, because I was just kind of curious, which I know I had emailed you last week and said, hey, let's do a story on this, because everybody I know, gay, straight, you know, athletic, not athletic, is watching them this year. And I don't know if it's because it's in London or just there's so many great stories this year, more of which we'll continue to talk about. But I read this story at Outsports that they said that that they can identify about 100 to 104 openly gay and lesbian summer Olympians only over the years. And that while out and while competing, an astonishing 53 of them, so over 50%, have won a medal. And so it does, you know, force the question of, are gay athletes better? And are out gay athletes better? Does that allow, you know, I don't know, knowing something about one's sexuality, does that enhance performance? And I guess that could be an argument for the ages, but it is an interesting statistic. Did you know that statistic? That like 50%?
Yeah, I'd seen that story as well. And like you say, you know, if basically 50% of the out athletes have won medals, that's very impressive. But I, you know, to say that, you know, I certainly think the out athlete has a lot more pressure than the traditional straight athlete. Mm-hmm. They know that everybody's watching them simply because whether they can shoot a ball good, whether they can swim, whether they can dive incredibly well, the first thing that strikes somebody's mind, oh yeah, well, Matthew Mitchum, he's the gay diver.
Yeah.
It's not like he's the gold medalist from, you know, a couple of years ago or whatever, or he's an Australian or this or that. Oh, you know, he does this. He's the gay diver. And
right.
That's a lot of pressure, you know,
sure.
And that kind of goes back to what you were asking earlier. You know, is that number 20, is that kind of low? Well, yeah, it's certainly is low if you look at the 10% traditional statistic for everything or everyone.
Mm-hmm.
But how many athletes, and again, it's no different from an Olympian to a pro athlete, and when I say a pro, I'm talking about one of the big four male sports.
Mm-hmm.
Do they want that added pressure?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I can sit and, you know, you do my sport, you know, obviously as a pro athlete, not an Olympian, you're making a ton of money. Do I want to risk this to be who I truly am?
Mm-hmm.
It's a fine line to walk. And, you know, like we say, I mean, you know, there's more, mm-hmm. gay athletes of those 10,000 without mm-hmm. question.
Yeah. But, well, and it's interesting, too, you know, the story that was, I mean, the big story, I think, in the past week was this South African archer who, after she finished her competition, she came out, you know, and I love her quote. I pulled this because it was supposed to be one of our news stories this week. I figured you and I would talk about it. But she said, "I'm an archer, a middle-aged, and a lesbian. I'm also cranky before my first cup of coffee. None of these aspects define who I am. They are simply a part of me. I am fortunate that my sexual identity is not an issue, and I don't suffer the level of discrimination and violence that black lesbians in South Africa do." And, you know, really, really interesting. I think it points exactly to what you're saying, and I hadn't thought about it, that, you know, to come out after keeps the singleness of purpose. For some people, they may see it of, you know, the game, the sport, the athlete, and not being the gay or, you know, the lesbian archer until the competition is over. And then to kind of declare that that's also a part of, you know, her nation, her age, her sport, you know, all those things are aspects of her.
Yeah, I'd seen that story about her as well. And I was amazed. I mean, it's a great story, and I love the fact, you know, she lists all those things. That's just part of who I am.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not like, well, I'm just this, and you know, the rest is extra. You know, it's a pretty good story.
Yeah, absolutely. I did just see that the first out lesbian to medal this year was a cyclist. It was a German woman. Her name is Judith Arndt. That was also one of our news stories. And she's been in the Olympics every year since 1996, which is pretty impressive. She won the silver. I don't know when she came out, but she is out. So it's interesting, you know, South Africa, Germany, we've got Brazil, France, the U.S., Australia, you know, our out gay athletes. It's not like it's just maybe in the United States where it's easier to be gay, or maybe in, I don't know, you know, Denmark or you know, one of the countries that, you know, has same-sex marriage. But it's really a smattering of what these games are about. You know, people coming from all different countries are coming to the games as gay and lesbian athletes as well.
Certainly. You know, and it's great to see that it's across the board. It's not all from, you know, here's just five countries, you know, U.S. and Canada or whatever those five would be. It's a bunch of different countries, you know, and it's, you know, there's only a handful from the U.S., but of course there's probably more.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's still pretty cool to see. And, you know, it's amazing because I saw in that same out sports story, the first known gay athlete was from the 1928 Olympics, a German middle distance runner. And it like baffles me because it's like, can you only imagine what it was like for this guy?
Yeah.
I can't even comprehend what it was like. If you think the spotlight now on, granted, I'm sure a middle distance event was, you know, this is obviously pre ESPN and all that stuff, but, you know, there had to have been some spotlight on every event, even if it's not the high profile event. But I just can't imagine what it was like for him, even, up through, you know, 96 or so, you know, maybe, those Olympics before then couldn't have been super easy for people to be out in.
Well, and the tide will really turn when corporations now, you know, we have so many Fortune 500 companies, you know, who have really changed and grown and advanced their policies on GLBT issues, hiring employees, practices, you know, how they are reaching out to GLBT consumers. And all of this will change, I hope, for GLBT athlete sponsorships, because I think that's been the key. You know, the one thing that is, and then we'll talk about just more general athletes, but one thing that is interesting to note is the very small number of men that are out as compared to the very large number of women. I don't know if that's like perpetuating some stereotype or what, but people would say also that it might be easier to be a female athlete and be out than to be a male athlete out. But it is notable.
I think the number from, you know, we go back to that original 20 or 23, I think of those 23, only three of them are men.
Yes.
So, you think three of, you know, I don't know what the breakdown was of the 10,000 male female, but even if you just go 5,000, which is probably not accurate, it's there's certainly have to be more out there. But I think it is, you know, there's a lot of pressure. It's, you know, perhaps it's a little more accepting for a female athlete to be out, you know, be it on team sport or an individual, than for, you know, the male athlete.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm sure that impacts those numbers,
well,
you know, greatly.
Importantly to me, it highlights, you know, the importance of having someone like you who covers LGBT sports and continues to, you know, tell those stories when either retired athletes or athletes come out at any time, you know, that we continue to show that we're everywhere. And hopefully, as I said, I think we've heard from some of the great athletes that the things that caused them to hesitate, unless they were in a team sport, was probably, you know, corporate monies and sponsorships, because so many sacrifices financially are made for these people to focus their lives and energies on their sports. That being said, Gabby Douglas is a huge American story, a huge Olympic story. I mean, you know, she's now seeing millions in endorsements right after we hear that, like, her mother had to file bankruptcy. The first African-American gymnastics gold medalist. So extremely, extremely impressive there, winning two gold medals for all around and also for Team USA. What are the other stories that you think have been super exciting in swimming or diving or gymnastics? Or I know we're launching into track and field, but there have been some hot topics through these Olympics. We've mentioned Michael Phelps. What are some of the others?
Well, certainly you mentioned Gabby, and that's a wonderful story. I watched her, and it was like, God, it looks so easy and effortless for her.
Yeah.
I mean, all those gyms are just fun to watch. I mean, the stuff they can do is just, it's incredible.
The men, you know, with the U.S. Bronze medalist, the Cuban American, you know, what he says for Cuban Americans. I mean, it's been a significant time with firsts here through these games.
Well, you know, unfortunately, as you do mention first, there is literally a breaking story, unfortunately, that's a negative one. American judo fighter, I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing his name correctly, Nick Del Popolo, he was expelled from the Olympics today, Monday, after he seemed to have eaten some, obviously before the game, some baked goods that had marijuana in them.
Mm.
He's the first of all 10,500 London athletes to fail an in-competition doping test.
Wow.
So that was,
has he spoken out as to whether or not he had knowledge that it was in there, or?
Well, of course he's, I'm going to give him the benefit that he did not know that, but that's what he, where it said it, you know, where the positive test came from.
Yeah. And what country is he from?
He's from the U.S.
Okay.
So that was kind of a,
yeah,
you know, bad news. You know, and, you know, there's so many great stories, but you know, one thing that I found interesting was this whole badminton scandal.
Talk to me about that. What's that scandal?
Okay, there were four teams, and a team is two participants who were kicked out for basically throwing a match.
Mm-hmm.
Their intention was to throw the match to get a better draw later on down the line.
Right.
And at first I was like, you know, my thinking was, I completely agree. That's just wrong. You can't do that. So I stepped back and started reading a little bit more, seeing a little bit more on TV about it. And I'm like, you know what? No, I don't agree with that.
Mm-hmm.
I look at it and said, that's their strategy. Mm-hmm. And whether it's right or wrong, as far as throwing the match, the bottom line is you want to get to that gold medal. They're not doing anything illegal. They're not, you know, they're not using drugs. They're not doing anything that's wrong on that. How is that illegal? It's strategy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I thought about it because I was reading a story about it today, and I was like, God, can I remember something along these lines that really, I can't remember what it was, and I was like, oh, yeah. It was even on the TV show Survivor, which
right.
is, quote-unquote, a reality show. And we won't even get into whether that's a reality show or, you know, stage or, you know. But there was a scene on there, I think in the last year, because I remember it, where one of the contestants says, yeah, I'm going to throw this contest, because then if I have to go against a girl, I know I can beat her. Mm-hmm. He threw it to go against the girl. But that was his strategy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in baseball, they can have an intentional walk. Really, you're going to walk this guy?
Mm-hmm.
That's strategy from a team.
Mm-hmm.
This whole judo, or not judo, badminton thing, I didn't agree with it. I thought, you know what? It's strategy. Because one of the teams, I believe it was a Chinese team, there were two Chinese teams, I believe there were an Indonesian team and maybe a Japanese team that were kicked out. And they didn't want, their strategy was, if we throw this match, then we'll get a better draw later on.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? As I said, at first I was like, oh, that's good. I'm glad they did that. They shouldn't be allowed to do it. I stepped back. I'm like, let me think about this. That's strategy. That's like the baseball manager doing things in the dugout that, you know what? He's positioning somebody here or doing this. I don't know. I just, it kind of rubbed me the wrong way. Like, why are we penalizing somebody for their strategy to get to the gold medal?
Well, and did they, were they, what happened? What was the repercussion from?
They were kicked out.
They were kicked out. Interesting. Interesting. It is interesting. I mean, I don't even know how I feel about that. I'd have to kind of sit with it because you do think that people are showing up to do, you know, to do their best. But then you also know, you know, swimmers who jump in the water and, you know, the funny thing is when we watch so little of it on television, you know, we're not watching 10,500 athletes on television. So when they have to go through all these, I mean, especially the swimmers, you know, when they have to swim and they swim, you know, to place and to, for every swim that they do. So they're in that final, you know, swim for the gold. And with all the, I mean, even the volleyball games and the tennis matches, you got to think that sometimes they hold something back. You know, they say that. They say, hey, I know I only had to swim this just to kind of feel safe that I would secure a spot and I don't want to blow myself out. You know, so I agree. Like, kind of what is the difference if you hold a little back, you know, to play those big games?
If Michael Phelps is doing 8 events and the first 4 are, he knows those are super strong. He's strong in each of those first 4 events, hypothetically. And he knows he can get ahead and, you know, he knows where he can be. You can't tell me he's going to go full on for those. So he's going to ruin himself down the line.
Exactly.
That to me is strategy. And I just was like, wow, I don't necessarily agree with this decision.
Well, let's see how it plays out. And all of you, let us know what you think about that. I think we've just got to have Ross back on after these games get over. We're going to wrap up these Olympics and talk about the new stories coming out. So, Ross, you stay on it, and we'll have you back on the show here in a week or so, and we'll wrap these Olympic games up because it's really an exciting year. I thank you for being on with us. And everybody else, I hope you stay glued to your television to watch these exciting Olympics 2012 London Games. Thanks so much, Ross.
Thanks, Amy.
Got something to say? Call us today. 312-21-BE-GAY. Well, everybody, I hope you continue to watch the Olympics and enjoy and root for Team USA. Perhaps we will have the most medals at the end of the medal count. Next show, Scott Duff will be with me. He's back from traipsing out around Wyoming. And what is it like for a broke-back cowboy out on the Great Western Range? Well, we're going to hear. I've never spent any time in that part of the country, and Scott Duff is going to take us on a tour and talk about how it is for gay and lesbian travelers traveling the Great West. And more movie reviews. The Dark Knight continues, the third in the trilogy, scoring huge numbers. What did Richard Knight Jr. think about it? And everybody's looking forward to market days this weekend, so head on out. I hope you enjoy the weekend. Lots of great bands, lots of great booze and things to do. We'll be we're just praying for good weather after Lollapalooza, the big storms of last weekend. So enjoy your weekend. Happy market days, everybody, and I'll be here next week with Scott Duff. Thanks for listening to another Windy City Queercast. Special thanks to our Queercast family, Kirk Williamson, newscaster, and Di Sturkey, production editor. I'm Amy Matheny, your host. Please comment on our shows at WindyCityQueercast.com and iTunes. The next Queercast is only days away, so don't miss it. Subscribe today. Windy City Queercast, queer and now.